We will call the Gates County Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, April 30th, 2025, to order at 8:48 on the clock. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I didn't know if I shut that back.
It's a lot easier.
The Open Meetings Act is posted on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation: Adams, Claybaugh, Haxby, Tiemann, Lytle, Dorn, and Juergens. Up first is the consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held April 16th, 2025. Approve all claims through April 30th, 2025 in the amount of $1,507,665.28. Accept claim number 25040353 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC in the amount of $190.45. And claim number 25040359 to RL Team and Construction, Inc. in the amount of $125,549.64 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve Premier Bank as an approved bank depository. Approve utility permit number 1328 to Windstream Nebraska LLC. Windstream will be replacing a fiber line under Locust Road just west of 94th Road. Windstream will start at pedestal S474YH, bore a 2-inch by 36-inch deep line under Locust to the north grader ditch, and then transition to plow the lie in the remainder of the way on private property. Located north of Section 23, Township 3, North, Range 7 East, Rockford Township. Approve utility permit number 1329 to Windstream Nebraska LLC. Windstream will be replacing a fiber line along 190th Road, starting at the northwest corner of Sage and 190th Road. Windstream will start at pedestal 4340E. Plow north in the west grader ditch right away to pedestal 4540E. The new fiber will be at the back of the 33 feet right of way, located east of Section 36, Township 2, North, Range 8 East, Island Grove Township. Approve and place on file the noxious weed evaluation and authorize the chairman to sign. Approve canceling check number 25040005 to American AED LLC in the amount of $3,825.90. Approve specs for 2024 or newer 1-ton 4x4 regular cab pickup long box. Bids to be opened May 28, 2025 at 9:15. A couple notes on that. Item 10, the pickup that was awarded, they were unable to provide that because of changes in their pricing, and they couldn't carry through with that bid, so they forfeited their $250 bond, and we will be bidding that again. Also, on item 3, our claims amount of $1.507 million, $400,000 of that is just an internal transfer between general fund and the roads. I would ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, unless you have any items you'd like to pull off.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Adams, second by Dorn. Any discussion? Ms. Haxby, you look like you have a discussion item.
I guess I wanted to thank you for, I was going to give Mark some crap for needing another truck so fast.
I know better.
So thank you for clarifying that. I was going to bring that one up. And then I just more a question of this noxious weed evaluation. What does that all entail?
Mark, do you want to touch on that? That's a yearly filing.
It's
through the state of Nebraska. It's part of the responsibilities that
the weed superintendent, weed superintendent goes around double checking on weeds, complaints, filing a noxious weed letter to the people that have
the Department of Agriculture.
Yes,
So just like what types of noxious weeds that we have?
Thistles.
Correct. Correct.
It also says that she will take her continuing education.
Here's on the back here.
I didn't know if it was like locations of issues or just what.
There's some on there. Townships. What she's all done.
Yeah, so that's all in there. Here's the clip.
So what the Gage County Weed Department has done over the year, where there's phragmites, where there's thistles.
Okay. I was just curious on that.
Certification of bales, so and so forth.
Were you scared I was going to get those out of order?
Yeah.
We have a motion by Adams, second by Dorn. Any additional questions, comments, or concerns, or items to pull off of the consent agenda? If not, please vote.
What's Teeman going to do?
7 in favor.
He doesn't know.
Motion carries. Regular agenda, approve or disapprove claim number 25040353. To Hard Rock Quarries LLC in the amount of $190.45, and claim number 25040359 to RL Teeman Construction Inc. in the amount of $125,549.64. This would bring the total amount of claims paid to date to $1.634.05 million.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
I don't know how we normally do that.
Second.
Second by Juergens. Any discussion? These are companies I'm involved with. The 125 is for gravel and hauling. The 190 is for material. If not, please vote.
Made a second.
6 in favor. Team and abstaining. Motion carries.
Juergens.
Moved by Dorn, second by Juergens.
I was trying to.
Thank you. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items for Board of Supervisors meeting. Welcome to everyone. Thank you for coming. Committee reports, building and grounds, winter lights. Mr. Dorn.
Dave's here.
Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We didn't have anything new come up. Only thing we have, carpet is going to be in today, so Adam and I are going to do the carpet squares. We'll get that laid as soon as we get those in. And the floor boxes underneath, we're going to remove those and just put the power on the back wall of that. And then we had talked about just getting a small power outlet up on top with the little ports in them also. Otherwise, we're just kind of playing catch-up on some other things that we've talked about a long time ago, so nothing new.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Thank you, Mr. Dorn. Equalization, we just had a brief equalization meeting. Personal property tax is due tomorrow. Property tax is due today. Reappraisal services are going around the county. And we'll be getting started in Beatrice this next fiscal year. Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket items, Applied Connective Technologies, a computer set up, 2 batteries, backup, security, IT services, $14,230.02. City of Wymore, quarterly MS services, $10,000. Eeks Office Solutions, copier lease, $10,797.23. Gage County transferred from general to road fund, $400,000. Beatrice Concrete, Sand and Gravel, Rock and Gravel, $61,353.83. RL Team and Construction, Township Gravel and Hauling, $125,549.64. Rock On Incorporated, Hauling Material, $10,926.18. Volkscapes Incorporated, 2024 CBC project payment quantity number 2, $472,400.30. Engage County Sheriff expenses, $34,296.82.
Thank you, Mr. Juergens.
Thank you.
Human Resource Employee Relations. We may have some discussion later on in the meeting. Otherwise, a closed session just to discuss some personnel issues. Law enforcement, emergency management, Mr. Lytle.
Sheriff, since you were here Monday, you got something today?
One thing on what we talked about. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
The RFPs are in now. What direction are we going now with that? People keep calling me, and I didn't know what to tell them. Are you going to narrow down a couple and go to the committee, or you want the committee to give something to you?
We're going to meet with the committee and go over the RFPs.
All right. Very good. And then we're going to do a closed session on that one, Gary. Is what you thought?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff.
I just handed you out this morning the executive order from Governor Pillen's office with the change of the burn permits. So figured a map was easier for you to understand. But conditions, as you know, continue to, for our state, improve somewhat. But there is still significant concern in the western part of Nebraska. And then on Monday, I did draw, as committee, your attention to a floodplain mapping kickoff meeting. That is going to be at the library. So it's more as a community outreach opportunity for anyone in any community to come in and look at Gage County's maps and so forth. But it's going to go from 10 to 1 at the library. So that's really all I have this morning, Gary.
I mean, this, just out of curiosity, Lisa, this executive burn order.
Yes.
Is that, I don't ever recall seeing that. I mean, we've had some pretty dry times, and I don't remember having like a blanket
executive
order for it.
So it's taken into consideration through NEMA, also through the National Guard, through the amount of acres that have burned within the last 60 to 90 days, with two outreach involving outside agencies to come in. Governor Pillen put in a proclamation on the dry conditions. I believe that was public last week, and then they would be monitored on a weekly basis. That first executive order was up today, and so last night they had reevaluated all the humidity levels and just the conditions reports coming back from fire chiefs as well. So it is a sensitive area, you know, because if resources are impacted, especially, you know, out in western Nebraska. But we still are, we can still have fires, even in green grass. So,
Okay. Yeah, I think everybody was kind of worried about that the last few windy days after the last go around.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa.
Yep.
I don't have anything else.
Thank you, Mr. Lytle. Road and Bridge, Mr. Juergens.
I'm going to turn this one over to Mark. He gave me some interesting facts this morning.
Mark, when you get done playing Candy Crush,
would you?
What is Candy Crush?
That game you were playing.
I wasn't playing a game.
Pac-Man?
Responding to a voicemail. Rockford Road is complete with stripes.
And it is nice.
Striped last Wednesday. We were going to try to shoulder it on Thursday, but the rain hit. So we shouldered it on Monday. They fine dressed it on Tuesday. We're going to let it set, get some rain on it, and then in the next week or two, we'll go and dress it up again and seed it, getting preps for the cattleman's ball. I did check with the NDOT about the Game and Parks recreational funds. There is some bad news on that. Everything is put on hold for about a year right now. So he did talk. He said call back at the end of this year and let's double check. So there is some holding up on funds with that. The Game and Parks they're stating they are broke. So the only project they are going right now, and it's very limited funds going out, was to the Calamus project out west. All of the projects have been shut down.
Township gravel?
Township gravel. We are in spring of 25 hauling gravel. We are popping out a township in about two and a half days per map. Boyden is producing gravel. They have a huge stockpile of gravel over there. Our trucks, just for our gravel on maintained roads, we're hitting about 4 rounds a day. So there's maybe anywhere from 15 to 45 minute wait is all there is right now.
And it's good gravel.
Good gravel.
So nice change.
We do have 3 subs hauling gravel for us. The goal is to get gravel done this year. And if things stay the way they are, it should be a pretty easy goal to accomplish.
Note with the roads and stuff, I did get those, like I said, those grants in for Senator Fisher. They were due last Tuesday. So we put one in for Hickory Road and Adams Bypass for roads. We also put one in with the Ag Society with the event center. We supported that with our support letter. And then reapplied for the ones for Claytonia. Claytonia's fire hall had made it through appropriations, so Senator Fisher will be prioritizing that one. And then I did submit Hickory Road and the event center through Smith's office, and I still need to finish the Adams Bypass.
Would you just go over just real briefly for everyone, the board and the public, the event center that you've put in for, just to give an overview?
There was a group of people that were interested in seeing if they could upgrade the fairgrounds. So they had went to a couple of the members. They took it to the fair board about coming up with a concept to replace the building out there. So they could basically to be in getting better power out there, bathrooms and showers that work for the people that camp, and then a showing facility that. And then the more we discussed that, they looked for a way to make it double as like a convention center, because we don't have anything here in the area for breakout rooms. We can't host any events or anything like that. And so through coordination, I spoke to actually Rachel, and Rachel directed me towards Dakota with the tourism to come up with a concept that would be more encompassing of different events that could be hosted here. So that group met. There's about 10 people that came up with a concept that would be able to do both things. And then we found a contractor to give an estimated bid. And then we wrote a support letter for it, and I reached out to a couple others. And then that was what we submitted for the community project funding grant.
Not me, Eddie. Now, that could be a real big deal out there. That could be a big investment in the community and could potentially pull people in. Having an event center would be really nice in our area. The college has always talked about it. I don't know where they're at with their potential event center, but if the two could work
concurrently,
that'd be fantastic.
I did talk to some other sources, too. Like, if that funding would be successful, there would be other grants that we could get to supply the remaining 20%. So it would be good.
Anything else for Road and Bridge?
Voguescapes, Tim with Vogue is here, wanting to give an update with the progress they have done over on the DeWitt-Claytonia roads. In the last 30 days, we have 2 structures that have the boxes are completely poured. They're backfilling. They should have finished backfilling on one of them on 1238, the closest one to the intersection of Southwest 100 and Chestnut. Yesterday, started backfilling with possibly today on structure 1239, depending weather. On Monday, they poured the floor on structure 1240. The way that the crews are working, I would not be one bit surprised if they're pouring walls and deck on that structure late Friday, if not beginning of next week. So they've really stuck the guns to it.
That's all in the last 30 days?
In the last 30 days.
We would have made that kind of time the previous 360 days. We would have been able to throw some more boxes in.
So Tim is here if you guys wanted to ask any questions, if he wants to give any updates.
Yeah, you...
Tim, would you come up to the microphone and give your name just for the record?
Tim Vogt here. He told you about 1238's backfilled. We're paving that early next week. 12:39, they are starting backfill today if the rain doesn't cancel them out. We're supposed to be paving late next week or early the following week on 12:39. 12:40, the floor is poured. We can't do the walls and the deck together on that one because it's got those control joints, my guys are telling me. So they got a little control joint since it's such a long box culvert in the walls. So I have pour in the walls Friday, and the deck pour on that will be Tuesday, May 6th. And then waiting on the concrete break, we'll start backfilling that on May 15th. We have had a great last month, 373 yards we got poured there. And then my guys are telling me we have to have 1240 and 1236 closed at the same time to do the paving.
1236 is that first one. I'd like to keep.
Yeah, I know we'd like to keep
that
it.
That would be like the last one I'd like to pave if possible.
Yeah. They're saying if while we're waiting for 1240 to cure, if we could start on 1236, otherwise we'd have a little delay on that.
We could.
We are working with Beatrice Concrete on a mix that'll set up a little bit quicker as well. So.
Make it work.
Okay.
We'd have technically two detours in progress or in service, but we could make it work.
Until the other one breaks out where you can.
Until one of the other one breaks out.
So. Yeah, I guess with that, we're still wanting to ask for a June 1st completion date, and we would be all right paying liquidated damages after that. I do think we're going to run a weekend June 1st with the concrete cure and everything else, just to be completely honest with everybody.
And I have spoken with the project manager about the striping and the grass seeding to do that once all the projects are paved and graded. Didn't make sense of having them coming down. One out of every couple weeks to finish something out.
So yeah.
We are on the process of once all of them are paved, we'll strike them all at the same time and we'll seed everything at the same time.
Well, and the roads would be open. That's the big thing is that traffic's
flowing. Yep.
Yeah, it'd be the change of the one detour so we can move right from 1240 to 1236 to pave without having to wait for the paving cure.
And we can make that work.
Okay.
Because 1240 is on the west side of 114.
Okay.
Any questions for Mr. Vogt? Anything else for Road and Bridge? Thank you, gentlemen. Good
Thank
luck.
You. Yep.
Thank you, guys.
With that, we'll move on to Rachel Krackemeyer, Engage Executive Director, to present the Engage Quarterly Report. Ms. Krackemeyer will also be here after the meeting in a closed session to give us an Engage update.
Thank you.
Yeah. You want another coffee?
Sure, why not?
You made the height joke this time.
I know, I have to get ahead of
it. Our complaint department's sitting over there in the chair. Dave.
Yeah, same one. All right, Gus told me I could take until 10, so you ready? We're going to read this word for word. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so good morning. I'm glad to be here to talk about Engage's activities for the last quarter, which is quarter three that we're reporting on, so January through the end of March activities. We have been really, really busy. And hopefully this report, I've changed how the information is laid out in it, so I hope you all took the time to read it. If not, I hope you do moving forward. A couple of things that I want to touch on is we are actively working on a new industrial site study. We've contracted Olson to do that study for us in parallel With that, we are working with Nebraska Public Power District through Norris Public Power District. We have access to their services to do what's called a target industry analysis. So the purpose of doing those two things in conjunction with each other is to reanalyze what industries we should be targeting, where we are lacking in this general region, but specifically Gage County. Pairing that information or the analysis and looking at what that provides will help us further analyze what potential industrial sites we do want to pursue out of the Olson study. So the Olson study is going to provide up to 8 potential sites throughout the county, and we are looking in a variety of pockets, specifically around the Cortland area, Adams, currently out around our Hickory industrial site, around the corporate city limits of Beatrice, and also in a couple southern parts of the county, kind of around Wymore, Blue Springs, to identify a wide variety of potential sites. Based on what the industrial or the target analysis shows us, will hopefully give us further insight in which sites we want to pursue or prioritize as those start to come through the process. So we're working with all of our utility providers right now to identify and locate where infrastructure is and where capacity is there for industrial size projects of a wide range. I mean, we could be talking, smaller industries, which we would consider supply chain industries. So these aren't recruitment efforts to get your quote unquote smokestack type of industries, your large scale top 10 employers in a county or a region. This could be supply chain industries. So think about industries that we already have, what's missing and what can we bring here to help support those operations that also bring maybe 20 to 150 jobs. That's our sweet spot. When we talk about other economic development initiatives, it's always workforce development. That's the number one issue we are having conversations with our current industries about, is the lack of quality employees. There is access to talent pipeline with Lancaster County. We have nearly a 280,000 workforce that we can tap in a 9-county area. So that's what we promote when we're trying to attract companies to site here. We do have the talent located in the area. It's whether or not they have the right skill sets. So we're working with our training providers and our educational institutions to make sure that we're developing those pipelines and training programs that meet those needs that we not only have now, but future needs. So we're assessing what industries are up and coming. You hear me talk a lot about biofuels and those types of industries. I even anticipate that biofuel industry will not show up on the target industry analysis because it is so new, and it's ever evolving. So we're working to develop those current training programs that will meet that need, which is value-added ag, supports all of our corn producers, soybean producers, those types of things. Okay. Other things that we've been working on in the business support and recruitment section, we have been actively advertising various sites and things that we have to offer here in Beatrice and Gage County. I had mentioned in a previous report that we advertised in the Site Selection magazine in Q4 of 24. That's been generating leads. We're still consistently getting calls, just asking for further due diligence questions on various sites that we have. So to further those efforts, we have also recently advertised in FDI Alliance International, which is an international publication, and it actually released yesterday. So you'll see social posts on our social media channels to access that publication and see we're not only promoting and advertising our industrial sites that we have, but simply that we are a high-quality place to live, work, play, and stay, that we have things people are looking for. We have reliable and available consistent power, which is something that every industry is looking for. In addition to those marketing efforts, we are partnering with the Lincoln Partnership for Economic Development. We are a member of that organization, and through that, we have partnered with GSLI Solutions. So that's Global Site Location Industries. They're a firm based out of Texas that does site selection. So when companies are looking to find locations in the anywhere in the United States, they go through various firms like this. And some of them are a dime a dozen, and we work with our partners across the state to identify which ones will give us the best potential leads, and this organization is one of them. So we've actually submitted sites for four projects through that firm. In addition to those efforts, we have conducted nine BR&E visits. So on page three, I give you guys kind of a rundown of what exactly a BR&E is. This isn't your typical walk into a business and just say, hey, how are things going? This gets down to the nitty-gritty of what businesses are experiencing and how we can best create initiatives and maneuver to make sure that their needs are met so they thrive and survive here. Because our role at Engage is to help these businesses mitigate issues ahead of when they are issues so that they aren't faced with having to cut workforce or to scale back production or to close their doors. So it could be situations of where we're succession planning, looking at potential buyout options. What are my options there? So I'm kind of the go-between in those types of situations. And you can imagine not every business is super excited to tell you all of their background information. So it's really a trust-building and relationship setting. But once we build that trust and relationship, which takes time and effort on both parts, It's oftentimes a simple phone call or a text message. You know, I had a business yesterday that reached out that was having issues with their internet service provider, and it was going to be 2 weeks until it's mitigated. Most of their sales are done online. That's a problem. So it's how can we fix this and fix it immediately? So they utilize me as a resource to help them fix those problems before it greatly impacts their business and their revenue moving forward. The other thing I will note as a final comment, and then I will take questions, is last quarter, and Eric was available and willing to participate, but we hosted two site visits with two international companies. The importance of those site visits is really to create that trust and relationship with these companies. So they come out and they physically tour our community. They're not just here to see the site that we're proposing for them to locate their business. They're getting a feel for the community and the people, and that's what ultimately drives the choice on where they choose to go. And one of the companies that was here for a site visit, this was actually their third visit to the city and the county. So we are creating those relationships, and that gives us an opportunity to ask those very detailed questions to help move them from a potential commitment to an investment. So the more that we're doing these site visits on a regular basis and getting these companies to say, I want to go out and physically see this place and visit this community, that's where we're getting traction and seeing successes. So with that, I will take questions.
I would invite you to stay around, and if we have any questions in closed session over project negotiations or things like that, just trying to think of anything else that we can talk about right now. Might just wait and get into the weeds after a bit.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Ms.
Move to place the quarterly Engage report on file.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Lytle, second by Dorn, to place the engaged quarterly report on file. Thank you, Mr. Lytle. Any discussion? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Completely out now? 7 in favor. Motion carries. Up next, Eric Niederklein, Deputy Director for MIPS, to discuss the reevaluation process of the county property. Mr. Niederklein, please give your name and affiliation for the record.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Derek Niederklein, I manage MIPS, which is the Technology and Services Division of the Nebraska Association of County Officials. And along with me is my colleague Alice Lauer, and she's an assessment specialist with our team. And going to give you an update on the things that we've been working on along with the assessor. As you know, the assessor switched the MIPS CAMA system, the computer-assisted mass appraisal system, about 2 years ago. And as part of that effort, we've been assisting with reviewing properties and really calibrating her system so that it can be used for mass appraisal. There's a lot of counties, in my experience, I've been doing this in my whole life practically, and there's a lot of counties that really get caught into valuing individual properties at a time instead of really getting things classified and listed consistently so that they can value groups of properties using a mass appraisal concept. And that mass appraisal is what county assessors do. And so we, as part of that effort, we've been reviewing, we've reviewed all the properties in the small towns, our team, and we've worked with the assessor's office, and so we physically inspected about 2,000 properties in the last several months in the small towns. And that involves going to the property, knocking on the door, visiting with the homeowner if they're not home. We put a door tag that has the assessor's phone number. It also has a QR code that and a website where the property owners, if they come back and see the tag, can enter information about their property. We do most of the review from the exterior of the property, unless someone invites us in to review the inspection. But generally, what we see on the outside is what exists on the inside. And so we've collected that information, worked with the county to import that into the system. So that's different than any other software company or appraisers. It's different than they're doing it now. We collect everything on the iPad with no need to go into the office. We've got the information. We collect it. We take photos, usually 4 or 5 photos of the property as we review it. We input it in. We import it into the system. Patty and her team go through and review, and we visit about those things further. And then what we did a few months ago was then use the information in the system. We used the sales, right, to calibrate valuations for all property. And so about 5 or 6% of properties sell each year, and we use that group of what properties are selling for to create a valuation structure for all properties. And that's the way it's been since the beginning of time, is that market value controls the assessed value. And so really the important part is having a consistent description of properties so that a house on this side of town and a house on this side of town, if they're built the same year and they're the same condition, they have the same amenities, are described the same, and generally, if you know the economics of this side of a town and that side of the town are the same, they should come up with the same value. Equalization is a very important concept, as you know, through your roles, and by having the properties listed correctly and having them valued based on the recent sale information as the law requires, it's generally a process that is never popular, but is more equitable. Alice Lauer and her team, through that technology, as they grab information, it's collected in real time, and she reviews what our staff is collecting out in the field to make sure that it's consistent. So it's been a pretty big job. There's I think more to do in the future, likely, but everything is gone well. It's been pretty standard, and we're sort of using Gage County as an example. We're doing a very similar thing in Saline County right now, and we've had a number of we're based out of Lincoln, of course, so it's driving distance. We've had we've done some things out west, but our next year is is growing with demand from other assessors with this line of work. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about the process, the software, the structure, or just assessments in general.
Mr. Adams.
Well, Rick and I, we're new, so we were wondering, what does it cost? What is the total project cost for the county for the reassessment?
So part of it's the software, part of it's going out and doing the thing. But I think it was, don't quote me on this, but I think it figures out to be between $50 and $60 a parcel.
How many parcels?
We did about 2,000 parcels, yeah. So that's, generally what it is.
Ballpark's all
yeah,
we needed.
Yeah, right, yeah.
How often do you recommend a reassessment? So we've had this conversation, Rex and I had this talk multiple times over the last couple of years. How often should we do an additional mass appraisal or a reassessment of the county?
Yeah, so the law requires that properties are inspected no less frequently than once every 6 years. And so that means that the property must be actually viewed once every 6 years. And the reason for that law is, properties deteriorate. The market always changes, right? The market changes every year. But properties deteriorate over a six-year period. Sometimes people make improvements, and they don't always file a building permit for that. And so the six-year cycle that's required in the law is intended for county assessors and counties just to keep up with the changes. Now, they're required to revalue every year, so to speak, if the assessed values are not keeping up with the market. Every year, the state, the Tax Equalization Review Commission, reviews the county's work. They reviewed it just a few weeks ago and said that everything in Gage was, met acceptable standards. But if there's ever a time where the assessed values aren't keeping up with the market, then the assessor needs to revalue. So reappraise, actually step foot on the property at least once every 6 years. As far as revalue, it would be, when the market either goes up or goes down. If market stays the same, good valuation structures can last for several years. And that's really probably the hallmark of what we're doing, is we're putting together a structure that when we leave, we don't want to come back. We're on to other things. And so we put together a structure that then, as the market moves, the software system that she's using, she can modify the valuation structure to move values according to the market. What we're doing right now is we're doing a lot of restructuring to get things consistent.
I guess that was the point of my question, is I guess the way you're explaining it is the structure, because we've had questions from the public and from the board and others that wonder, are we actually equal? And I guess if that structure is what we're changing, what you're telling me is we may be a decade or more before we have to reevaluate that structure again, or longer than a decade.
Right. So, what we're doing is putting together the structure and the values. And I would say if we did it right, and I'm confident we're doing it right, in 6 years, within 6 years, the county by law will have to go through and review things. But it won't be to restructure it if they've kept the structure in place. The single biggest reason the structures get out of whack, so to speak, is because of protests, is because of individual situations, new people involved, etc. And so I'm actually leading, every year I present at the County Board of Equalization Workshop in Kearney. I encourage all of you to attend, or any of you to attend, but we'll talk about that. When the structure is put in place, if someone comes in and protests, and they say, and protests are a healthy part of the process, right? But they come in and they say, I think you've got my house overvalued. And the first question is, why? Why do you think that? Or is there sale information? And they say, well, my property, I've got mold in my basement. It floods frequently. My foundation's shifting. And those are things that you know, that you don't see from the outside, right? And so that's a perfect example where during that protest you say, that's great information. I'm glad you brought that to our attention. We're going to send somebody out there to take a look at it at a time that works for you. Go out and look at it. You say, yeah, the foundation's shifting. There's cracks. The condition of the property is inferior to what we thought. So within the structure, you change the condition rating from, say, average to a fair or a fair plus based on the standards that are in place. What that does is it keeps the property within the structure, and then it values it according to similar fair condition homes. A lot of counties will go in and make changes to the they'll go in and change the depreciation. They'll change the value more as like an arbitrary, I think this is the right answer, and they'll go in, they'll put that in there. What that did is it disconnected it from the structure, and that value then lives forever. It doesn't get back on track next year. And get, once it's disconnected from the structure, it's always disconnected. And so it's obviously something that we emphasize strongly. There's anomalies. There are things that don't quite fit, and those will always happen, but it's a very small percentage. So,
sounds like it's a better system way to keep everything equal. I do like that we're going around having one person evaluating everything, because then we know it's fair and equal. I know that we get a lot of complaints that my values went up, and then they say my taxes are going up. Well, that doesn't necessarily always mean that. That's based on the levy that each board sets. But what my question is when you were reevaluating this, did you see, I know we discussed this a little bit, but did you see any big changes in like percentages, like increase up, down, staying the same when you did that? And what should we look for that for possible protests, I guess, coming in?
Right. Averages are hard. What you're absolutely going to hear, because you hear it every year, is well, my property went up 5%, or my property went up 20%, and my neighbors went up 5%. You know, that's not fair. And we looked at value this year, and whether it was equalized last year is not really part of the equation, unfortunately, for this year. The response to those types of concerns, where one went up at a larger percentage, is the result equalized, right? That's what we're really focused on. And so within communities, you're going to see different percentage change. I'll say most of them are increases because of the market and the sale activity, and even some of the smallest towns was pretty obvious. Was pretty obvious. It might change in the future with interest rates and economic things, but we're looking at the sales over the past few years to establish value today. We didn't find any communities that really stuck out as being extremely undervalued. We found just different. We found a similar theme of things that that needed to be listed consistently, and as a result of that, some were listed favorably inconsistent for on one end of the scale, and they were pretty close on the other. And so, at one end, you're going to see a huge increase, and at the other property, you might not see as much of a change. But the result, we feel, is defendable and is equalized. And
when you were talking about your communities and basing it off of sales to establish those values, did you stick within those communities to find those sales? Because, like, say, Cortland is going to have different kinds of sales than Claytonia.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we did. and that's a great question. So we stayed within those groups, but there are, Claytonia doesn't have a lot of sales, right? Cortland had a few more. Adams had a few more of that. We're also cautious to make sure that we don't overreact to a small group of sales. While we use sales from the local area, we also looked over time at what the relationship was between one community and another, And so when we established valuations for, say, Claytonia, we could also see that over time, even though they don't have a lot of sales, they would generally sell predictably lower than Cortland, which has a closer driving distance to Lincoln, than Adams, which has a little different economic draw with that community. And so, yes, we use sales from that area, but we also compared it with the broader region just enough to make sure that those relationships, those consistent relationships, were maintained.
Mr. Adams.
Okay, I'm kind of slow, so you're going to have to explain this maybe multiple times to where I can understand it. I have never understood a house sells for $200. That is a market price, but it's turned around and assessed back at $150.
Yeah.
How does sale price on an open market not reflect market value?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's one that I get a lot. And there's really a subtle difference in that assessors are required to determine the assessed value should reflect market, and market value is defined by law as a price that it's the most probable price that a willing buyer and a willing seller will pay in the ordinary course of trade, neither one of them being forced to sell or under any undue influences. The key word in there that really makes that different is the most probable purchase price as of January 1. And so I have farm property, I have rental property, I'd be a farmer instead of being an assessor any day of the week. But I've bought property and I've sold property. I've bought property where I got a good deal. I've bought property where I quickly found out that I paid too much and I was just a little too quick on the draw, but I got it. And so in the assessment realm, we're looking at the most probable price. And so if a property sold for $200,000, we're not going to take only that sale. We're going to take that sale, the property over here that was similar, the property over here that was similar, and one sold for $200,000, one sold for $180,000, one sold for, you know, maybe $145,000, all for their different reasons. But there's generally, you know, and as you're familiar with the real estate market, you know, there's generally a range in which properties will sell with a buyer and a seller. We take all of those individual sales and put them together to find really the most probable selling price of those properties within the range. So if a property is assessed, if it sold for $200,000 and it's assessed at, say, $180,000, you know, that's you know, within the range of the most probable price. Saying it a little different way is that if that property sold for $200,000 on one day with that buyer and that seller, and then 2 months later, you know, we're moving out of town, is it going to bring exactly $200,000? No, it'll bring somewhere between $180,000 and $220,000. And so really that range is what assessed value represents, and that's because, you know, two reasons. The market's not precise, and the other thing is the assessor has the unpopular job of valuing every property in the county every year using mass appraisal techniques, and so the effort is really to get them within a reasonable range that property could sell for.
So probable is relative to which side you look at it then.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I agree with you 100%.
Those numbers that he just talked about, I mean, they were at least close, you know, within, you know, given 40,000. But we had one, Patty, 2 years ago, the ground in the house sold for, what, 445? And they wanted it valued at I mean, we're talking $100,000+ difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the
The argument was, well, it's not worth that, even though you just paid that.
You'll hear that, right? The markets, and again, this is probably a dangerous number, but there's been studies that have said that the market is a variable by 10%. that 10% cannot be predicted with the economic models or the statistical models that we use, simply because the motivation of a particular buyer and a particular seller at that very specific point in time is taking into accounts that don't represent what another buyer, you know. So if we all bought, if we were all going to bid on the same property, we would be within a range if we had, we would be within a reasonable range. That's the range that we're trying to establish with our values. And again, probably be quoted with this number, but in our experience, if we can put together a model that hits 80 to 90% of the properties within that reasonable range in a mass appraisal environment, that's pretty darn good. The protest process is for those outlier properties, those situations that don't conform to, you know, the market around here and that sort of thing, and those have to be dealt with you know, with interior inspections and that sort of thing. So
you're right, you'll be quoted. I see two pens that are almost smoking as they're writing down information.
Alice Lauer is, if you need a spelling, let me know.
Does that $50 to $60 a parcel cover, because, like, you know, we're going to redo this evaluations. Evaluations are grow out. We're going to have protests, obviously. Are you going to be a part of that process with that?
Yeah, we've talked to Patty, and we could help. That's outside of that, and that's just, you know, billable at an hourly rate. And we've told Patty we'd be available to help, but it's not part of that. And you know, even that rate is a reflection of, you know, Patty's close. She's a good partner. She's really wanted to do this the right way, and. Even our effort in doing that is at the extreme low end of the, you know, the scale. So
maybe, Ben, something we should consider moving, because for the person that has done the evaluations and keeping that consistent all the way through.
Yeah, that might be something to talk to Ms. Milligan about, having a representative that's been involved with this sit in on the.
I just want to add a little bit. So, Derek, you might want to give them a little bit of your background. You came from the, you know,
yeah.
Alice.
Yes.
A little bit. So
okay.
We've known each other for a long time. And
right. So,
going forward now.
Yeah. So I started my career really out of college working for the Department of Revenue in the Property Assessment Division. I worked there for 14 years. I ended up managing the appraisal or the measurement function. So when you talk about the state reviewing all the county's work and then making sure they're in compliance, I managed that group. I also was an appraiser that managed the or that appraised and managed the valuation of railroads, telecommunication companies, and pipelines. So, you know, the state assessed stuff that gets certified. So I managed that. And then I was deputy county assessor in Lancaster for 5 years. And then I've been at MIPSIT 2 years. And so, yeah, my background. I'm obviously a certified assessor. I'm certified by the International Association of Assessing Officers as an assessment administration specialist to manage reappraisals. And so, you know, I do a lot of things at MIPS. This is obviously the one that I like the most. And Alice, and that I have the most experience in. Alice Lauer was, she started as a an appraiser in Lincoln County in North Platte. She was there for a number of years. Then she was a worked on the fee appraisal side for a period, and then she managed the assessment operations in Lancaster County for a while. And she's been on our team for the last 2 years. So that's our background. And yeah, we've I was measuring Patty for compliance a long time ago. And now we're helping her with things. So that's our general background.
And just to kind of summarize what I'm doing is, as you know, I'm getting probably this is my last term. So I want to make sure that our working file and things like that manage what they're doing. Everything's put together so that on the front of the card, or and some people are getting away from paper cards, but I probably won't in my term here, but everything will kind of match up, you know, as we've gone along over the years and we've protested properties, changed them based on, you know, what people have mentioned to us. Sometimes when you get things, it starts having a snowball effect when you lower something because you feel like that value isn't right. So my whole goal was with these individuals and knowing what their background was to equalize so many of these properties. Is it possible to do it perfectly? No. Are we going to have some pains along the way? Yeah, I think we are. But I think those are things that need to be worked out and get a good snapshot of everything that we have. The market has definitely been different in the last 3 years that I've been the assessor with the type of money that's been paid for properties. I mean, you know, a few years back we saw $300,000-$400,000 acreages. Now we're at $500,000-$600,000 acreages. That's a pretty fast time period to get those values up. And so that kind of started to get me concerned because, you know, I think interest rates were down. I don't know if that was part of the reason, but there was a lot of valuation increases over the last few years. And so this will be more of a, you know, to smooth it out.
Ms. Milligan, I think Mr. Stannard has something he'd like to say as well.
I'm familiar with these folks.
Daryl, would you come up to the microphone just so we get you on the record? What you have to say matters.
Yeah. Only questions I have, being a referee, that we're going to referee, Mr. Dieterklein referred to his values. So they're going to defend their values, or is that the case?
We don't know yet.
You're not defending them.
We don't
okay.
know.
Are you going to supply us with a model that we can use as referees on the sales, your land value models, and all the models that are available? Are those going to be to us?
Yeah, those are in the computer-assisted mass appraisal.
But they're going to be hard copy printout for the referees.
They could, yeah, they could.
But we need them.
Yeah.
It's not if, we
yeah.
need them.
Well, yeah, whatever's needed.
Okay.
And I would sure. I would say the same when it comes to the board afterwards. If there are any additional protests that go beyond the referees, we would need that same information so that we can at least have something in front of us. A few years ago, we didn't have that, and it made it extremely difficult.
Right. Yeah, you should have them.
And we become that outlier.
If he doesn't supply them and they give them to us, we'll make copies for the board so you can follow along.
But there seems to be a little bit of disconnect that you put all the figures together and everything, and then Daryl kind of takes over with the protests and everything. What do you charge if you would come in and be in there during a protest?
Yeah, I'd have to figure it out, you know. But what we've done is basically through her software system calibrated the valuation structure in a way that allows her to produce valuation reports, like Daryl mentioned, the models, how things were arrived at, and then you know, as far as there are different structures in different counties, definitely, and some and so. You know, it's definitely not something where our group is the software company that's focused on making sure that her stuff is set up and to produce accurate values. What happens after that, we're somewhat flexible on, but between, you know, Daryl and Patty, you know, there's obviously process here, and we're, you know, like I said, we're focused on the software and value end.
I want your Doge team, your young guns out there. Is AI part of what they do? I mean, the way they were zoning, you know, satelliting down and all that. How in-depth is that?
Yeah, so...
I shouldn't call them Doge team, but they were all young kids at some point.
Yeah, they're young kids. Yeah, well, just like on the technology front, you know, we've got we've got a GIS map. We've got, and so they're able to click on the parcel, make sure that they're on the right parcel because it shows their location. As soon as they take pictures of that property and they say, we think this is an average condition and an average plus quality, immediately it shows up on her screen, which is back in Lincoln, and so that she's reviewing it. When they come in at the end of the day, she'll have a list of them and say, tell me more about this property, to make sure that we're consistent. We've also got, while we didn't, you know, rely on it too heavily, we did drive the areas with 360-degree cameras, like the Google Street View, so that she could also at a later time, you know, pull up the detail and look at it. In terms of the valuation modeling, yeah, we're doing the cost approach, but we also use some AI tools to hopefully highlight where, you know, maybe we were missing things. And there were times it would suggest things that weren't right, and times that brought things to our attention. We said, yeah, we need to look at that. So, yeah, obviously, we're a software company with appraisal, appraisal backgrounds, mass appraisal backgrounds, and so we use technology pretty heavy.
Okay. They answered my question. We want to be sure we have available to us. And he said that their values. I think what they're doing is working on the software CAMA system, which they do very, very good at. So, but
Daryl, I guess I'd ask you and Ms. Milligan to discuss this and decide if we do need a representative from MIPS to sit in with you maybe this first year on the referees. I mean, you may say, no, this information, it makes complete sense. We printed this sheet off, and we can follow through this completely.
Yeah, as the referee, we may not even agree with what their values are setting. What we want to do is to be sure we've got the hard copies as to how they got to where they are with their values of the land and the improvements.
Before we get to that point, let's do a trial run and get the hard copies on something and see if you can sit down and defend it, just to make sure that we're reading through it right, because whether we need it for a protest or down the road when we're looking at a piece of property to reevaluate in a year or five.
Or Turk.
We want to make sure that we can go through and understand it properly. Even if all the information's there, it's going to be different. So it may not hurt to go through some practice ones just to make sure that we understand how it's presented, and then we can start getting in the swing of the new presentation of information.
Right, and I think it's also
you're pretty good at
that. Yeah, I think that.
Thanks, Daryl. Because we're still used to the sheet that shows this date, this many dollars, and I mean, it was uncomfortable even losing those sheets because we could look back and see what adjustments were made over time in pencil.
Yeah.
And as that goes away, it's like, okay, what were our past valuations? Where's our card? We're not going to have those cards here in 10 years.
Yeah. And what one tool, just to kind of highlight even the technology side, is that we also do GIS. We're expanding our GIS offerings to counties as well, and we put together, in some counties, put together sale maps that have really been popular when property owners, because a lot of property owners don't realize, you know, that sales have been that high in their area. And so this is just a map that would go on the assessor's website. They click on the link, and it's sort of like Zillow in a way, but it highlights the recent sales. Property owners can click on that, and it pops it up. We also have for each property that protests.
When you say Zillow, doesn't Zillow argue against you guys quite often? Because the Zillow price will be sometimes $100,000 higher than what the assessed or what it just come out as.
Yeah, there's areas that are where they have less information, you know, so there's more swing in their values. But I was more or less referencing it like from the display of what properties are selling for. And then we also have a tool within the CAMA system where any property that's protested, you punch in the PID, and it will find, using a statistical formula, the most comparable sales with pictures of those properties. And so that likely will be a new help this year with protests.
Within multiple years, we'll have some type of technology installed in this room. What year it is, I can't tell you for sure because it keeps going on and on. But once we can do that instead of a printed copy, I assume we'll be able to, if the assessor pulls up that property with the PID and we can have that comparable property, would we be able to look at that on our screen?
Absolutely.
Also?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a pretty straightforward thing for us to set up.
What other products and services do we use with MIPS?
We have my programs, my payroll, my accounts payable, all that stuff is with MIPS.
Treasurer's
website,
office.
Treasurer.
We're using quite a bit of technology.
A lot of usage.
I'm looking at their website. There's like 20 different things that do.
They're geared towards counties in Nebraska. Yeah. So it's been a good business model for the original folks that set that up and incorporated into the county structure of the state.
And basically, this is more the assessor side of it, because that's just been kind of happening over the last few years. I mean, before, when you started with MIPS, it was more treasurer. I don't know what yours was, but it was more of a treasurer's package.
You switched to MIPS 3 years ago?
Just, was it two or three, Derek?
Two, a little less than two.
Yeah, Terrascan doesn't exist anymore. I mean, basically, I don't think. You've got how many counties? Quite a few.
73.
So that makes a big deal, too, as far as consistency across counties, too. When the state goes to evaluate something, I'm sure where there's somewhat, I mean, even if each model's different, they're somewhat consistent, at least.
Right, even Claytonia. I mean, we just revalued the town of Wilbur. And so while those are two different counties, there's some overlap in the market. And part of our check was not just within the county, but also to make sure that there was a reasonable relationship between Wilbur and Claytonia. So,
additional questions?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, you bet.
Ms. Milligan, anything else?
No, we just need to figure out going forward, because, you know, this is our first year with this type of information, and there's a lot to absorb. I mean, this is a different whole technique of what we're used to.
Like I say, maybe run some trial runs, because we do want to be prepared when we get to the referee process.
And see, the hardest part is to know how many protests you're going to have. And that's, you know, we've had 100, which isn't
We won't be short of protests this year, I'm sure.
I'm sure. And so that's the whole trying to figure out, because they never come in until the last week. So.
Thank you, Ms. Milligan. Yep. With that, it's 10 o'clock. We'll take a brief recess before going on to the next items. We'll recess at 10 o'clock and come back in 5 minutes.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
We'll reconvene at 10:06. Up next, approve or disapprove recommendation of special designated liquor license for Tall Tree Tastings. On June 7th, 2025, for the Cattlemen's Ball, we have a letter from the Sheriff's Office that they are aware and are not in opposition to this.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Dorn. Any discussion? If not, please vote.
They're not going to have it
in favor.
Six.
Motion carries.
You have nothing.
It's the one day, evidently. That's what they asked for. We have a couple planning and zoning commission appointments coming up after that. Ms. Haxby has asked for a closed session prior to that. We will have open discussion on both of the candidates, candid discussion on both after or as we discuss them. But I'd ask for a motion to go into closed session necessary for the protection of the public interest or protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual at 10:07. For personnel.
Moved.
Second.
Moved by Adams, second by Dorn. Let's go into closed session at 10:07 for personnel. Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. We're in closed.
Right.
Yeah. I was. I'd ask for a motion to go back into open session at 10:17 on the clock. Moved by Juergens. Second by Dorn. Go into public session or open session at 10:17. Please vote. 7 and.
Oh, and now it flashed.
Oh. Yeah, I give up. 7. Oh! 7 in favor.
When Apply Connected does this other stuff, is there
We're
a new voting system, right?
Except for my switch.
Yeah. Are you serious?
No, that gets replaced. Up first, approve or disapprove reappointing James Linners to the Planning and Zoning Commission for another term.
James currently sits as the chairman of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Motion to approve.
This is
moved by Dorn.
Second.
Second by Haxby.
I know.
Any discussion on Mr. Winters?
Okay. Who made
I've had nothing.
Motion by Dorn, second by Haxby.
I've had nothing but good things about James. He's very professional, listens, and takes the time to hear both sides.
Anything else?
Vote this time?
Yes. Okay. There's a motion by Dorn, second by Haxby, to approve Mr. Winters for another 3-year term. Please vote. 6 in favor with Adams voting nay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Lightliners? I thought we'd already did.
7 in favor. Motion carries to reappoint Mr. Leonard for another 3-year term.
Button's got an affection in him.
Up next, approve or disapprove reappointing Jeff Argo to the P&Z Commission for another 3-year term.
I will go ahead.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Second by Lytle. Mr. Argo is a former chairman of the P&Z. He came in after Dennis Rosine as chairman. I think he served for 2 years, if I remember right, before being replaced by Mr. Lenners. I talked to Mr. Argo, and he would really like to serve another term. He's actually gone past when his term is up as of now. In discussion with him, we do have another 2 other appointments that will be coming up here this year within the next month or so. Thought I'd try to start knocking these out. I've promised Lisa for 6 months we would, so we're slowly starting to
from what district to what area?
We don't have any specific areas.
Okay.
The ones that will be coming up would be the South.
Terry, we're Steve Wetware would be in Terry's.
Yeah, South, and then I suppose Central East. So it'd be your area, I believe, Eddie, that are coming up yet.
Who are the 2 that are up?
Steve and Wade.
Wade might be in mine. Well, jointly.
I talked to
Thornburg in mine.
He's in mine.
Okay.
I talked to Mr. Argo also. We had talked about him in the past. There's banter back and forth at times between the Board of Supervisors and Planning and Zoning. I don't know that it's banter, but there's not always agreement. P&Z looks at the rules.
Maybe a little more heated, controversial items also.
Right. And the board looks at the rules, but we also put the political side onto it because that's partially our job. That can put the 2 commissions at odds sometimes, but hopefully there's a mutual respect between the 2. As I've talked to Lisa and Argo and Lenners, us not being there doesn't mean that we don't care about what they need and we want to be involved with them and help wherever we can. At the same time, we don't want to over-influence them because these items will be coming back to us. So they're an independent body, the same as we're an independent body. So there's always been good communication, I think. I didn't talk as much to Dennis as I did Argo and Lenners, but Dennis got lucky and didn't have as much heat at the times when he was there either.
Eric, I would like to explain my stance. I'm probably going to vote. It's not a probably. I am going to vote no. My reasoning is Jeff is in my district. I like Jeff. I get along with Jeff. But I also represent a district that has contacted me that they are against Jeff being on planning and zoning. Sometimes we don't vote our own wishes. We vote the people that represent us. And that is the choice I'm making right now. I'm going to vote to represent those that I represent.
I have had quite a few people. Well, as soon as there's controversial things, the wind was one, hog barns were one. People come out of the woodwork wanting to be on P&Z. Those aren't the people to take because those are very passionate people about a specific issue. We need very open-minded people that are looking at things and possibly supporting things that they don't like because it makes sense or it fits into our zoning. Now, if we change our zoning, then they need to be looking at those rules. We're still going to take that and do whatever we're going to do here. I hate to say that. Planning and zoning knows that. We go outside of the rules here sometimes and shape things a little bit more. But we do need, and I'm not saying this person in particular, I'm saying anyone that we look at, we need people that are going to look at the facts, step back, and sometimes...
We put them in an awkward position also in the aspect of they're unelected. So sometimes they are looking at things differently when you talk the politics of it. They also know we have an opportunity to override them. So that's challenging from both sides. They go to all the effort, they go to all the work, and then it ends up at this board anyway to make a decision that they spent lots of time on.
I also heard from one of the members, he's like, I appreciate being on this, but I'm ready to be done. He said it affects me at home, my wife, you know, how we interact with people because people are now upset with me. You know, they say, I don't know why you guys would want to do this. Being the board, you guys and lady, why you would want to do it. And it's a labor of love. You have to like what you're doing or you're not going to be doing either of these jobs.
Just one clarification, Chair. We're never outside the rules.
Thank you.
We always work within the rules.
We always work within the rules.
Different
interpretation. Thank you, Counselor.
I don't want that quote coming back to me in a court of law.
That's like we never lobby, we advocate. Mr. Lytle.
I'm just going to say, you know, I know there was some different things that everybody's got their own opinions on, Jeff. Jeff and I haven't always agreed. We've been on different sides of some of the stuff that they brought up to us, and I voted against them and whatever else. But every time that I've called Jeff and asked him for, you know, a little bit more into what he was thinking or you know, this is my take, what's going on, why is your take different or whatever else, I had good conversation with him. He's been open. For me, he's always been a good resource when I, you know, haven't understood something or, you know, what they were thinking on the planning and zoning or when it gets a little deeper. Jeff's always been good. Even if he didn't agree with me, we still had that conversation and he was willing to have that, you know, that back and forth. And, I have a hard time, you know, with my experiences with him having problems and not seeing where he's not done the job. So, I'm going to be a game time decision here, but I have a hard time seeing the faults.
I will say, if you guys know Jeff, he's not going to be a smooth, hold your hand, make you feel better about things on things. If he's thinking something, he's probably going to say it, and he's going to roll with it. But I've had good experience with him as chairman, as a board member. I know some of the public has had a hard time with him. We've actually talked as a board of supervisors about talking to the planning and zoning about how they run their meetings, making sure they're treating people well. I mean, it's really easy. These guys are there starting at 6:30. And then when they're there till 9 or 10 o'clock at night sometimes, which as we talk to potential P&Z members, I'm telling them most meetings are only an hour long. So let's stay on the same page. But you know, it's like the nights do drag on sometimes, I know. Any additional discussion on Mr. Argo? Ms. Hatchby?
Just when we started this whole thing, we had went in or changed kind of the process of how we did it. You know, we took applications, and then we would choose the best applicant on when those applications in. And we did have two of them, I think, on this round, and I think that we had a better application, first of all. And then also there were I have had multiple comments about the level of professionalism. Argo himself, he's a great person, nice guy. A little rough on the, like, you know, he says what he thinks, but sometimes the lack of professionalism causes more issues on those hot topics.
And I don't know if you guys get the calls on these. It's only when it's something controversial that I've heard anything, but I've had calls on, I think, 5 members of the PMZ.
We did change the policy to look at applications and take the best applicant, and in this situation, I think we had a better one, too, so.
And I will say, I mean, we're an open session. This is for the public to hear what our thought process is. We don't do stuff behind closed doors. You get stuck with our real discussions. I've been pretty straightforward as the chair to make these appointments. I'm going to do my best to not put anyone in that's an activist for one of the sides or another. I mean, it's easy because, I mean, I had this discussion, I think, with Dawn. My thought process before was I'm going to load P&Z as I can up with people that think like me. And then things should go the way that I think they should go. And just like on the board here, having the different opinions, I mean, Mr. Schuler was a different opinion than what we had, than what the majority of us had. I think that's fair to say. Mr. Schuler added to our discussion sometimes, and I think it would be a mistake to load our board with all one-sided people. I think it'd be a mistake to load our P&Z with one-sided people. I think we just need as objective of people as possible. Ms. Haxby.
Trying to find a word that is public appropriate. To say that you don't want to choose an activist as a person on the board, and that because that is their sole focus, I quite frankly is BS. Because I'm sorry, but you don't get involved until you're pissed enough to get involved. And sometimes I'm sorry, but that is a lot of it. But once you do get, like, to say that that person is only good for that one thing because that's what they were a hot topic of, then that means, quite frankly, then I would have been worth nothing else on this board because that is what got me involved.
We're a very political body. We're one of the only ones that's even a partisan body.
I get that, but I got involved because something was going to affect my area. And that's how I got to be on this board. But since then, I've done more than that. So for somebody to still be involved even after a hot topic or even after something that they've really cared about and to exclude them for that stance, I think is... I don't have a good word for you. That would work for...
I know what you're saying.
I think that that's a very poor way to look at it. People get involved when they care, and I think that those people are more than just that topic.
That's a good point. Any other discussion on appointing Mr. Argo? We have a motion by Dorn, second by Lytle, to approve Jeff Argo to the Planning and Zoning Commission for another 3-year term. Last chance. If not, please vote. 4 in favor, with Adams, Claybaugh, and Haxby voting nay. Tiemann, Lytle, Dorn, and Juergens voting yay. Motion carries.
I'll borrow my button.
Up next, approve or disapprove additional funds to Region 5 systems. This one I'm going to send over to Ms. Haxby.
So Region 5, we have a statutory requirement that we have to fund it's for Region 5. It's based, they have a formula that they do to figure each one out. What they're asking for is just a little bit more than the statutory required funding, but it is still less than last year's budgetary expense. I told them that I would support this, and I'd bring it to you guys and advocate for it because it is less than last year's tax asking, and it's something that, and they're not asking much more than what is statutory required.
I thought earlier when this was getting split that they had plenty of funds.
That's a PACE. See, this is where it gets really confusing. It's back and forth. So, and then on, just as a note on that, they did take out, they went and spoke to the other counties, and they are taking out the reference for Lancaster being in consideration for the executive board. So I think we are set with getting the bylaws done for both of them. I think we're set for getting the interlocal done for both of them. So we can get things moving with that, and then I would say that it'd be good to support and approve these additional funds. Do we have a motion yet to do that? I would move to approve the additional funds to Region 5.
Second.
Motion by Haxby, second by Jergens.
Is this going to be yearly? We have to vote on this?
Yes, it would be anything different than the statutory requirement would be a vote. And I did like that they did this because this is a request, and we were very specific about that too. So it is something that I think they're doing a very good job about going each year.
Was this tied to Lancaster?
Last year it was.
We voted
to keep favor. To maintain it, mm-hmm. But that was some discussion that I had too. There was some discussion between counties that Lancaster would only do their improved amount if every other county did theirs. I expressly told them that I would frown upon that ever happening again because each county is in a different financial situation. So I think it should be up to each county individually whether or not they are going to do something like this.
We've had a much louder voice on Region 5 with Ms. Haxby, so thank you. We have long-term representation by Mr. Byers on that well in the past. We have a motion by Haxby, second by Jergens. Any additional discussion on approving the additional $6,744 to Region 5 systems?
What was the dollars last year?
It was $54,000, I think, and now it's... there's a chart, I don't remember.
It's very similar total funding.
But it's less than
last year. Between these two would be 49, $50,000, $73.
Yeah, it's just over 50 for this request here.
Okay, so last year we did not do anything actually. We paid $45,978 is what I budgeted.
No, we had approved it last year.
We did approve to give them additional funds, I think.
I didn't have anything for additional. I just had this amount.
Maybe they never requested it.
So.
I don't think they did.
We did. I know we did.
I thought it was to maintain the same. I don't know. Anyhow, either that or I put in for $45,000, but that's what I put in.
This one would be for just over $50,000 total.
I think it was 54, and it was down to 50-some. And I can pull. If you give me a minute, I can find it.
What it was in 22-23 was $57,377.
That was in 22-23
fiscal year. In 23-24, I budgeted $45,978, and that's what I kept for 24-25 then.
Just give me 1 minute.
So, I don't know if I can fill up, but I didn't get anything extra asked for. So. Then we also have that substance abuse amount, too.
Last year, we were at $54,251. And this year, they're asking $50,073.
Anything else for Region 5 systems?
So did we approve it, but then they didn't request it, so we didn't.
If not, we have a motion by Haxby, second by Jergens, to approve the additional funds in the amount of $6,744 for a total of $50,073 to Region 5 Systems.
You want to make that total part of the motion to list those numbers?
Yes.
$50,000
what? Terry, are you good with
Terry,
that?
Terry, you're right. That, all right, that will be in there. $50,073, which would be the statutorily required $43,329. And the additional requested funds of $6,744. Additional comment, question? If not, please vote. Six in favor with Haxby voting nay.
Nope.
Motion carries.
That's seven in favor, Eric.
Okay, seven in favor now. I did not understand.
Well, Tiemann don't vote the way that shows.
Like the unicameral, that's a present.
See if IT people can get a new board up there.
We do have that brings us to the end of the agenda. Anything the board wants to bring up before we go into closed session? We have a closed session for personnel and possible contract negotiations. Lisa, yeah.
You gotta stay here.
I think I'm narrowed down to six more people.
Vital.
We are getting closer.
Contract and capital.
Thank you.
Are we going to change the policy for ENZ again? Because we gave a policy and we didn't follow it.
Most of it.
Well, we got two.
You didn't put the other
two applications
candidate on there,
is all.
So there
was I'm sorry.
You didn't give the choice of the other candidate when we voted either. So.
So.
No.
I'm vetoed
it. No, you can stay here.
I'd ask for a motion to go into closed session necessary for the protection of the public interest or protection of the public, protection of the needless injury to the reputation of an individual. We will have two closed sessions.
Thank you.
They'll run concurrently. One personnel, one contract negotiation following. No action will be taken after this closed session.
So moved.
Moved by Adams.
What? One at the shop, one at the phone.
We need a second.
Second by Claybaugh. Go into closed session at 10:40 for personnel and then contract negotiation. Sheriff, I believe yours will be very quick, so I'd ask for you to go first so that Ms. Krackemeyer is not rushed afterwards. She has enjoyed spending her morning with us.
That would be good to know, yeah.
Please vote. Seven in favor.
Jurgens is gone.
Hey, turn that on again. Let me see if I can.
How about we just, since Jurgens is gone, how about we just use his for your voting?
Bam. He's abstaining again. take it away, Sheriff.
Okay. Upon return to my office last week, I had a claim that was denied and for a meal ticket on a deputy, so I need to find
meal
out what it was.
Meal ticket is a perfect example of a terminology to use for this.
Let me call it receipt, whatever. So that's been a practice for years and years and years and years. So I need to find out when I go back. I'm sure it will be a grievance filed, but I want to get your guys' side of the story before I go back.
What was he out of town for?
Is the mic still on?
He was at the graduation for Deputy Shepherdson.
I'm sorry, one more time.
He was out at graduation for Deputy Shepherdson from the county.
Maybe I'd ask for a motion to come out of closed session at 12:27.
So move.
We were in closed session for personnel and project negotiations. Moved by Dorn. Second by Haxby. Any discussion? Please vote.
Whoa. Change that to.
You got enough green lights.
Four in favor. Oh, no, hold on. I want a correction. Three in favor with Lytle voting nay. Motion
zero.
Carries. We're
zero.
Out of closed session. Anything else for the good of the order?
Don't let a vote happen for this thing. Just call it.
We'll adjourn at 12:28.